Hey, what's up, everybody? It's time for another wonderful episode of the Bill
Burt
Podcast. What's going on? We have an amazing guest here today. One of the best comics I've seen come along in a long time. And I already can tell the way he's shifting. He doesn't like compliments. He's just an amazing joke writer, performer. He has a podcast called Nate Land. And also, I believe, a live date coming up. Please welcome to the podcast, Nate Bargatze, everybody.
Thank you. Thank you. You know, it's funny. I remember being with you at, do you remember that bar that was right a couple blocks up from Broadway Comedy Club? That they would always do crazy shots where they put fire in shots. It was known for all the shots that they had. But
no, a long time ago. I must have been hammered.
Was me, you, and DeRosa. And a bartender.
Oh, there like, you go. Oh. Yeah, that would do it. That there goes the brain cells on that.
And the bartender's like, oh, my, we're such big fans of you, my boyfriend's. And you're like, all right, you know, you like that. You're like, oh, I appreciate it. And she's like, all right, well, you don't have to be rude about it. You're like, I would rather you tell me I'm the worst. I at least have something to go with than just being told how great I am.
Now I feel bad. I fucking ruined. I don't know. I ruined those moments.
She killed herself, so.
She didn't. It's all my fault.
Hope you enjoy.
Well, thank you, Nate. I thought you were going to bring up me and Nate have gone to a number of NASCAR events, Daytona 500, Talladega.
I just went to Kansas City this weekend.
Oh, you did? Yeah, we had a great time. I mean, NASCAR is in like this weird place because their fan base got decimated in 2008 by those fucking banker cunts that never went to jail. And that really, really hurt the sport where people – it was a combination of that, and then I think they didn't have the Dale Earnhardt person that everybody loved and then the Jeff Gordon guy to hate. They kind of ran out – it's like wrestling. You got to have your heroes and your villains like any sport, but
– Wait, what do you mean they got decimated by bankers?
Well, Bert, in 2008, I don't know if you realize, our entire economy collapsed.
But how did that affect NASCAR?
Because it's working class people and everybody ended up upside down in their house. And you had a house that was overvalued deliberately by these fucking assholes and who then also made a bunch of people who shouldn't have been qualified to bid on the house, which drove up the prices. No,
I know. But how did that affect NASCAR?
Well, they're fans, Bert. They own
hold on. That's like saying the 2008 crisis affected the NFL. It didn't affect NASCAR, did it?
The fans, I think, being
their fans are really
Yeah. That's the most broad fucking statement I've ever heard, Bill. Hang on, that's like saying the lingerie
economy collapsed, Bert.
No, I know, but I heard. I'm sorry, I misheard that. I thought you said NASCAR was affected. But it's specifically by the collapse of the economy. And I was thinking everything.
The guy from NASCAR told me that it really killed them.
Oh, for real?
Yes. Yeah, so I'm just the messenger here, Bert. Yeah. Jeez, you're on your fucking toes this week. It's like, I think if you were on like the bubble, living paycheck to paycheck, you know, you're fucked. And NASCAR is also mostly in the southern states. And I don't think they ever recovered in a lot of ways after losing the war, how bad the North was mad and fucked him over and all that type of shit. Like, I mean, I'm going back a while, but you know, my family, we moved down there for a minute and we were all getting like C's in school and we went down there and all of a sudden everybody was getting A's and B's. I mean, they were like 18 months behind. My brother was a sophomore in high school. He was like adding fractions. So, I mean, it's a really dumb thing that the country did to itself. And they sort of kept that divide. And they, you know, so I feel like those people, if somebody's going to get hurt, kind of get hurt first. Whereas a lot of the NFL cities, Philly, New York, Boston, San Francisco, their money's in like sort of different areas where you can sort of survive.
I see what you're saying. I see what you're saying.
That type of stuff.
Jaws 2 just came out on theaters down here in the South. So,
oh, for real?
We're pretty, yeah. I didn't know if y'all knew there was a second one. We didn't see it coming, but
They consider it a comedy. They consider it a comedy down there because no one had a gun on the boat to just shoot the fucking shark.
By the way, 2008 was one of my biggest years in comedy. So I always have a special place in my heart. There's no money. That's like the first year I did Conan was 2008. Yeah. But it was, you mentioned what NASCAR race when I just went. So I was there at last, our Sunday, Kansas City Speedway. Everybody wearing masks. Because I'm tired of everybody yelling at the middle of the country that no one's wearing their mask. Everybody had their mask on. Everybody in that race had their mask on. Now, it was 38 degrees, so that helped. But
it did also, you had, the president had to fucking catch it.
Yeah, well, then, yeah.
I don't know. Maybe I'm immune. That's my favorite thing ever. With his hands. That thing I just caught? Maybe I am immune to it. Dude, I stick up for red states all the fucking time, but I don't do it to a fault. I don't do it to a fault. If you're fucking riding around, you know, like in the middle of nowhere and you don't have a mask on, that's one thing. But these gatherings, you know, we saw it out here with like the Black Lives Matter, those marches, there would be like a spike. There's nothing. You just got to wear. It kind of seems really hard to catch it. You just have a fucking mask on and stand 6 feet away from people and stand on the thing they painted on the floor for you. And people just can't do it. They got it under their. My favorite guy is the guy who, like, when he goes to talk to you, where are you going to be? He leans in. The scientists are the only way we're getting out of this. It doesn't make a difference, Democrat or Republican. People are too fucking stupid or too between their own ears or just too arrogant and just have no empathy. You can't get everybody on the same fucking page. It's gonna take a vaccine. That's what it is. That's my call. That's my prediction. I'm sticking with it.
I was in Prescott, Arizona, and I was making a joke about going back to normal. Like I saw something where I was like, it's so crazy I got to do this. And it was like, I was going back to normal. And someone in the crowd goes, we've been acting like it's normal the whole time. The virus isn't real. And I was like, oh, you guys don't believe in the virus? And the place went fucking bananas. And I was like, wow.
No, and it, just not to shit on red states. I was out here in California, big blue state, right? I did a show on Seal Beach, tried to do one. And the lady showed up running the thing, had no mask on. Bless her heart, as you guys say. Yeah. And she goes, oh, do you live? I go, where's your mask? She goes, oh, you from L.A.? She goes, no, we're down by the beach. We have the breeze. You'll see it's different. Like, I guess the virus chills out down there and just sort of surfs on the breeze. And that's literally, you know, no traffic. I can get to that place in 12 minutes from my house. So, I mean, you know, I don't know. It is what it is.
Is your daughter back in school, Nate?
Yeah, we never stopped. This is the first I'm hearing about COVID. So she had 2 weeks where they did virtual learning, and then because you have to be under a certain percentage, but then they 2 weeks were just at, like some people, dude, this little girl came to because they would do different pods. There's five little girls. Cause you kind of quarantine with like some of the girls in the neighborhood. My daughter's 8. So all these little third graders, and they come to different houses. So the one girl comes to our house, and it was tough because they're all, some of them got different teachers. So the moms, it's kind of hard to keep them all paid attention. I get home and I golfed like during the day. And so I get home and this little girl that's there, I don't even know this girl. Right when I get home, she goes, where have you been all day? I was like, who are you?
Where have you been all day?
This little girl, you're like, whoever this lady marries, I mean, that guy is in for it. I just want to see it. To be like, she asked me. I'm 41. She's 8. To walk out of my house and go, where have you been all day? It's insanity.
You think she's repeating what she hears her mom say to her dad?
I mean, possibly. I've met both the parents. I mean,
I don't want to get you in trouble here. I just realized you're talking about people who could actually watch this. And I'm suggesting that they're raising a little nag.
No. Yes, it could be. Maybe she does see this. Look, she's not big crazy. I think they know. She just speaks her mind. I think when you have a kid that does that, you know it. You know,
have you noticed people who have, like, cunty children, they try to say they're precocious?
Yeah, I'm not sure.
That person's so precocious. It's like, no, your kid's an asshole because you just keep gassing the thing up that everything they do is so interesting. It's annoying the shit out of me. Get it away from me.
We hung out with a guy, a family who had a very highly autistic daughter, and she would say exactly what she saw. And we're sitting out by the pool, and she goes, he drinks a lot of beers. And I was like, oh, fuck, this is going to be a rough one. She's like, he's got a big belly. Why is he so fat? And I was like, and they're like, you know, it's her, whatever it is, Asperger's or whatever. She's very candid. And she, the whole time, she just decimated me. Didn't pick out anyone. It wasn't like, wow, your wife looks a little older than she should look. Humbert, you know, none of that.
Just going after me.
You know, well, Bert, you got that star power, man. The wattage drew her there. After that description, I feel like Patrice might have been highly autistic.
Yeah. Patrice was definitely autistic.
You think that girl went to bed that night and was like, that was a long night. That was a big, like, she went on you so long that she's like, she put herself to bed that night. She goes, that was too much.
So two nights ago on the bus, we're in St. Louis right now, and we're on the bus. It's me, Jesus, Shane, Dave Williamson, my cousin Andrew, and my another cameraman, John Manns. And this guy, John Manns, that we tour with, cannot let shit go. We have an opportunity to go on kayaks, and he's like, early in the morning, you guys want to go on kayaks? No one wants to go on kayaks. And he brings it up so much that I said, man, I think you might be autistic. So he goes, I don't think I am. And we're like, no. And so we get drunk and we go, you know what? Let's take an autism test online. Right. So we all take this test. It's like a 50 question test to find out if we're autistic, and we all get our numbers. Anything over a 22 is autistic. Right. I'm at like an 18. Dave Williams is a 4. He's like he's the least on the spectrum. And like, we go through and Jesus goes, I got a 42, and we're like, holy shit. He's like, wait, am I autistic? And we're like, this backfired. We didn't mean for you. He goes, I know I'm a little different, but wait, I'm autistic?
Dude, you know what that reminded me of? One time I had a listener write in, and he wrote like, how does it feel to have mild Asperger's? It was like, it was the epitome of the arrogance of the internet. Like, this guy had no medical background whatsoever. And the fact that I couldn't remember yesterday, but remember like football players from the 1970s. I forget if he diagnosed me as having Asperger or whatever the fuck you did, autism. Yeah. It's just like, I don't know. I kind of would like through this whole fucking year and everything that's been going on, I have just sort of pulled away from the news and social media. Like I probably should get a little more in touch with what's going on out there. But I just kind of watching this virus get politicized, that if you wear a mask, you're a snowflake. If you don't wear a mask, then, you know, you're a dumb Trumpster. Yeah. Like just, it's just like,
oh, sorry.
No, sorry. I'm just saying, just watch how a virus, how it went down that fucking road. And we're screaming at each other and had some Andrew, that guy who wrote in really pissed me off only because I knew he was right. He's like, why do you guys listen to all your government's propaganda? Why are you guys all sitting there screaming and yelling at you? And I just got all defensive, like, what, as opposed to your country?
That he wrote in like last week, and you read it on Sunday when you recorded it. And then on the news yesterday was they were talking about the failed coup in Bolivia and how they reinstituted Morales. Yeah, it was actually very timely.
Oh, is he from Bolivia?
That was my guess with South America. That just seems to be.
I thought it was a Russian bot when I got halfway through, which I don't even know what that is. But yeah. Anyway, Nate, so you're a good old boy, yeah. Right? You're from the Black Hills of Kentucky. No, you're from Tennessee?
Mm-hmm.
Tennessee.
Nashville.
What was it like going to New York as a Southern man with a high intellect like yourself?
Yeah.
And then having to listen to so many mouth-breathing morons that live in New York who basically think that they are somehow amazing just simply because they were born there. And then meanwhile, guys like you who are supposed to be these hicks, you know, blah, 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 blah. And you come to their city and with ease get in with the clubs and just destroy.
Yeah, it's you know, at the beginning when I first moved, the beginning I was so new. I mean, the beginning was, I would say, I saw you. I was at Boston Comedy Club and your first Letterman, I was barking on a corner when you did your first Letterman. Because I barked to you and I felt terrible and I go, I'm sorry, man. And you're like, all right, it's fine.
That still happens to me.
Yeah.
That still happens to me.
I know, didn't you? You told the story with the LOL, which is my favorite.
Yeah. Did you hear that? I went to the LOL comedy club and they had no idea who I was. And I was trying to do a spot. It was last year when I was doing Pete's movie.
Yeah.
And I was trying to do a spot and I literally had to like start saying my credits. And I like to get some time, and they were just like, all right, well.
I bet they use your name in Times Square. I think the people go, just say Bill Burr's on the show. Because they would always lie about Seinfeld, Dan Cook. They say all these names. So now they're going to say, they're in Times Square going, Bill, we got Bill Burr on the show. And everybody's like, oh, wow. And they go up there, and Bill Burr never comes. And now Bill Burr actually does come to the show.
Yeah.
And then they go, ah, you know. They go, no.
Oh, I barked George Carlin.
Oh, really?
Yeah, George Carlin was walking down the street, and I knew it was him. He was with, I think, Jimmy Miller, maybe? Like, one of the Millers. And yeah. I didn't know the Miller, but I knew it was George Carlin, and he was coming to see Karen Bergreen. He was a big fan of Karen Bergreen's. And he was walking down the street, and I said, hey, man, we got a great comedy show. You like comedy? And he started laughing. He goes, I love comedy. I said, well, what kind of comedy you into? And he said, I like Karen Bergreen. And I went, she's going to be on the show tonight. I said, I can get you a discount. And he said, yeah. And I said, hey, have you ever thought about trying stand-up? And then he just started laughing. And I was like, it's a pleasure to meet you or whatever. And he hung outside the Boston and shot the shit for a while.
That kills me. I never met him.
Yeah.
Never met him or Pryor.
I never met Pryor. I watched a documentary.
I could have met Pryor, but I was hanging with Patrice. He's like, I don't want to go in there and see him like that. And I was such a tag-along. I was like, I guess I don't either. So I didn't. And I'm like, no, I would have. I wouldn't have looked at him any differently. I would feel bad that he was like that, but I would have talked to him because his mind was still there.
Was he
my worst bark, Nate? My worst bark, you'll appreciate this. Because I barked at the Boston Comedy Club too.
Yeah.
Puerto Rican couple. Hey, you guys wanna come see comedy? And they're like, yeah, how was it in? And I said, well, actually, you know what? Ma'am, it may not be good for you. I'm sorry. I apologize. She said, why not? And I said, well, they're smoking in there. And she goes, and? And I said, well, you're pregnant. And the Puerto Rican guy goes, oh, shit, bro. You stepped in it today. She goes, I'm not pregnant. And I was like, oh, fuck.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So you started barking at the Boston, Nate? Keep going.
I started barking at the Boston.
Yes, so.
The babies. When's the baby due?
Yeah, the panda. That's all I'm really trying to say.
Yeah.
Sorry.
I started barking at Boston. I saw Chappelle used to always come there. So it was like I moved to New York in 2004, and I barked there. The end of 04 to 05, Chappelle's show was on, and he would always come up and, you know, pop in. There'd be eight people in the crowd at Boston. I performed for one guy once at the Boston. It was just brutal, and it ran all night. And I remember trying to get someone to go see Chappelle. I said, "Hey, Dave Chappelle's on stage. Y'all can just go watch for free." And they go, "We don't believe you." And I remember I was like, "Why would I be making this up?" And, you know, Boston had those three steps, and you could look in the door, the window. Yeah. I go, "Just go look. If he's not there, then leave." And they go, "No," and then they left. And they kind of wanted to watch it. It wasn't like they're like, "I don't care about comedy." They would have loved to seen Dave Chappelle, but they just, I guess, thought I was tricking them.
My big thing when I barked, Nate, was I ended up getting a Time Out New York article written about me because of it. I would grab NYU kids, and I'd be like, hey, we got comedy up there. And they're like, and I go, and we don't ID. And they're like, okay. So I just shovel in all these underage kids in there. They'd fucking get liquored up. And then they'd sneak them bound through the back into the Bagot. I'd walk them down the back stairs into the Bagot, and we'd party there all night. They're all like fucking 19, 20, and they were like, this guy's great. So they word spread at the dorms that they could drink at the Boston Comedy Club. So my first probably 6 months of working the door, I am loading the fucking place up, loading it up. And Time Out New York's like, what's the story on this party animal kid? They come and seen the show. And I basically, he goes write an article about me, and he's like, I mean, these kids love you. And he thought I was hilarious. I was like, oh, no, I just don't ID them. And he was like, what? I was like, yeah, they're not like fans of mine. I just don't ID anybody.
At that point, you just got to go with, I don't know, man. I just think, you know, I got this relatable thing. I remind them of their uncle that they can trust.
Yeah.
Do you know that the Boston Comedy Club now is a wine bar?
Yeah.
And I went in there one day. Some reason I was down there during the day, and the village that whole block looks so weird to me during the day.
Yeah.
At night, it's just was this big, ominous, like magical place. And then during the day, it's just like whatever, right? So I was just happened to be walking by, and I was like, you know what? I think I'm gonna pop in here, just see what this place looks like. It's still the same shaped room. And I walked in, the person asked if I wanted to be sat down. And I was like, no, I used to work here a long time ago. This was a comedy club. And the kid was like, really? I go, yeah. I go, the stage was right there. He goes, anybody famous ever go? I'm like, Dave Chappelle probably did 9,000 hours of comedy, right? I named all the names, and he had no fucking idea. And I was just like, wow, I am old, man. I'm literally the old guy going, when I was a kid, you could go.
You know what I almost did, Bill? Oh, so on my last Netflix special, they said, where do you want to shoot it? And then they said, dream scenario. And I said, you know what I want? I want to go back and I want to find the Laugh Stop in Houston. It's just a restaurant now. The space is still the same. I want to rent it out, and I want to recreate the Laugh Stop. I want to rebuild the Laugh Stop stage, set it up like it was, and do a series of specials there. Like, bring in comics who would love to do a laugh, like everyone, like Attell, all the people that work there. I was like, that would be badass, but it's way more expensive than I thought it would be.
Yeah, that's the one that Hicks and Tennyson and all those guys came out of, right?
Yeah, it was a great fucking room.
Do you like specials in comedy clubs, though? I mean, I get the idea of like doing that, but I like a special that looks like a special.
I like a special in a theater. And Joe Coy told me, Joe Coy was like very adamant that I did my last special. He's like, you should be doing a big fucking theater, like big theater. And I was like, no, I like the 1,000 seats. I think that's the perfect size theater for a special. And then I did it, and I was like, yeah, I'm glad I did it, because I ended up doing, I think, four shows. I recorded four shows instead of just two, which is I'll never do anything different.
Yeah.
Bill, where did you do yours in London, right?
Yeah.
Where?
Royal Albert Hall.
Oh, that's right. Fuck. Wait, yeah. Where did you do yours, Nate?
I did mine in Atlanta. I'm doing one next week.
Were you at what? The Tabernacle?
No, we did it outside. It's the arena. There's an arena and a theater next to each other. It's like 30 minutes outside of Atlanta. I don't know why I'm blanking on the name. Ron White did his special there too. And but I forgot my shoes the night we taped and had to get a cab to just bring shoes out there. Like 30
Dude,
minutes.
If I told you someday when we hang out, I'll tell you all the wardrobe shit about all of my specials.
Wait, why not tell it now?
Because I don't need people then fucking acting like they didn't listen to it, and then they noticed this, I noticed that, and da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Dude, I just, yeah, there's always, because I fucking hate shopping for clothes.
Oh.
And I don't give a fuck what I look like. And then there's my wife who wants, oh, we should do this X, Y, and Z. And then there's always that. And then somehow something, I forget something, or I add something, or I wear the wrong thing. I'm trying to think of a special where I actually wore what I thought I was going to wear. I can't think of one.
I'll tell you what. In the last special I did, I'm very specific to saying, please watch that my necklace is in the center of my chest, not like up stuck on my shoulder, that my belt is in the center. And that's all that really matters, right? Because I that's for a special, that's all I really care about. We go to look at the taping. The first show was horrible. I had a horrible first show. Second show was phenomenal. Huge mustard stain on my jeans. Like, I must have had a hot dog and just spilled mustard on my jeans, and no one fucking caught it. Huge mustard stain. Couldn't use the second show. We could use the tights.
But you're out there without a shirt on. Of course you got mustard on your pants.
Yeah.
Did you see TJ Miller's? TJ Miller's pours water on himself, and it keeps going from not much water to a lot of water on his shirt. Yeah. And then it's like back to not much water, and then it's like his whole thing is his whole body's wet.
His continuity was insane. I was tracking that going like, oh, they definitely shot two shows, and I don't think that outfit – they brought one outfit.
Yeah.
So, wait, you're shooting a special next week?
I am, yeah. Well, let me tell you, my Comedy Central special, I have my hair – they didn't have a hair person. Like, I've learned, like – so they had a makeup person. So I go, is there something to do with my hair? And they didn't. And so the makeup girl's like, I'll just do it. And we had to get, like, a can of hairspray from, I think, someone in the audience. And so the first half or one set, like my hair was like kind of down to the left. Like there's just a spot that goes to the left. And then the next one, there's no spot. And some people have noticed, but you can definitely, it's something that if you watch, you can be like, oh, this was the first show and then the second show. And it just goes back and forth.
My Comedy Central.
Okay, I'll tell you something.
Oh, yeah, go.
The one in Nashville, I never got my pants hemmed because my wife was like friggin' 9 months pregnant and she would have caught it and I never noticed. I wore the exact same pants, two specials in a row. We had one where the AC was busted. So we had to pay to get it fixed, meaning me. And then the guy was so afraid it was gonna break again that he barely turned it on. I had like HD makeup on. The whole first one we couldn't use.
Really?
Because I was like glistening and I didn't want to, and I had a white towel, and if I went like that, all that makeup was going to be on it. So that one we only used, it ended up being fine. We just used the second show. My last special, I wore the wrong black pants. They were more fitted and these were more baggy from like 10 years ago. And I just, you know, black pants are like black pants. I threw them in. I didn't even notice till we were editing. I was like, oh, those are the wrong ones. Because every single special, I don't think I ever went out.
My first Comedy Central special, I had a gray shirt and I started sweating. And you can see a little spot and it just grows throughout the special. Just a sweat. And then it's soaking and then I'm drenched.
I don't get that. That's the weirdest thing about Koi. You don't want to see a comedian sweating, but a rock star can be like Angus Young with it. It's just raining off his forearm, and everybody's just like, he's giving it his all, man. No one's going, look at Angus. He must be really nervous.
No, black comics can sweat. Black comic, Richard Pryor, soaking wet on the Sunset Strip, right? Soaking wet. Red outfit. Cat Williams, soaking fucking wet. Soaking wet. Cat Williams so wet, his hair turns different styles.
Cat Williams murders.
I do remember one time Martin Lawrence wore like this leather poncho that I think ended up being way hotter. I mean, that's just not going to breathe. And he was just covered in that thing. And I do remember, but he also did like 90 minutes that he was like, he was pretty glistening by the end of it. I don't know.
So where are you doing your special next week, Nate?
L.A. I'm coming out. So I'm going to – I was in St. Louis. You're at the same place I was just at, Belleville or something like that.
I have no idea.
My opener left his windbreaker jacket in Indianapolis. If you haven't been there, see if you see a windbreaker jacket. I told him I would ask you. I go, oh, that's Bert. You might have already been
there. I've been to Indy.
Oh, never mind. So they we're going to go this weekend. I do Dallas, Austin, and Houston. And
then I was just in all those.
What city did you start out in?
Comedy. I moved to Chicago first in 2 years. So I was in Chicago with Pete Holmes and Hannibal and Kumail Nanjiani and all.
Did you work that Zanies, that great Zanies downtown?
First club I ever hosted was that Zany's piano on stage. Jim David, is that his name? He was he headlined and I hosted. And he played the piano. I remember that.
Is that place still around with COVID? Yeah. And everything? Okay. Because I, you know, oh, Dangerfield's just closed.
Yeah. Well, yes. So, Dangerfield's. I've never seen Dangerfield's packed. Every time I've gone in there, it's been a small. They've been social distancing for quite a while, and they.
Well, when we were coming up, Norton was the first guy from our class to go in there, and everybody was making fun of him. I remember Patrice said, "Where'd you come from?" He goes, "Dangerfield." He goes, "Yeah." Who'd you go on after Ruth? Who'd you have to follow? Ruth Buzzy?
So, by the way, this is my memory. One of Bill's worst heckles happened at Dangerfield.
Huh?
One of Bill Burr's worst heckles happened at Dangerfield.
Oh, yeah.
If it's red and it's, what did he say?
Oh, these super angry guys. Just like, you could tell if you looked at them, there was going to be a fight. And they were just like, they were super, like, I was actually afraid on stage going, what the fuck? And they just wouldn't stop talking. They're interrupting the show. My brain is going, don't say anything to them. Please don't. And I finally looked out and I finally was just like, hey guys, what's going on stage? You know, what's going on over there? What's trying to do a show up here on stage? What's going on with you guys? And this guy just goes, anything red and on stage is a faggot. And which is like, what are we in second grade?
Yeah.
Like anybody with a blue shirt has the cooties. That's literally was. And he said it with such anger that I knew if there was a follow-up question, they were going to be up on the stage. And I had already been chased around the stage by a woman one time. I remember picking up the mic stand and holding it in front of me going, lady, you can't do this. You can't do this. And I'm doing, when I tell you, it was like a 25, 30 second thing. And nobody moved. She finally just, I think, got tired of chasing me. And she sat down, right? So he said that, and then I couldn't say anything because I didn't want to escalate it. And I just went right back to my shit. And I had to walk past. I think I had to walk with him in the back. It all sort of blurred together. It was such an amazing club, though, because you could do a half hour during the week. And there were so many New York comics that I thought made that mistake of, I'm just staying in the city until I get a fucking deal. So they all had 20 minutes of material. And then if they had to go do a road gig, they were struggling. So I wanted to make sure that I was at least doing a half hour of my act for when I had to go out. Back in the old days, you had to do 45 minutes to close. I wanted to make sure that half hour I was going to get them, and I could also switch out the half hour that I did, so I could essentially do my whole act during the week, so I hit the ground running on the weekend. And it was an incredible club for that. And once Norton went in, then I went in, Pete Corielli went in, then Sherrod, and then for a moment there in the 2000s, they really had this young sort of group. Rob Magnotti was going in there, and the place was really filled. It was always a little rough during the week, but on the weekends it was fucking packed. And you know, Nancy Redmond hosting and stuff. I was really super, super sad when that thing. My dad saw me in that club eat my fucking balls on a weekend. I felt bad for him because that's the first time he ever really saw me legit bomb. And I had to tell him, I was just like, I had to make it. I was like, listen, don't feel bad for me, like, Dad, that's happened to me thousands of times. That club is fucked up and I was a little bit off, but you know, this is just part. I remember he was sort of fascinated with the fact that is not only is that a part of the job, but you can stand in front of a room full of people, feel them not like you for 20 straight minutes and leave the club and still be in a fairly decent mood.
Yeah, you go do another show.
Huh? Yeah.
You go do another show,
or it's just like, you know, I'm in at that club. They know I can kill. Oh man, I saw some of the great ones, the great fucking heckles. The Frank Santarelli one. Frank Santarelli played the bartender in the Butter Bing on The Sopranos.
Yeah.
There was this fucking club, this crowd one night. And when I tell you, they were just laying there, just sitting there. It was a hot summer day. They weren't moving. They weren't engaging. They weren't looking at you. They weren't looking away. They were just there. And I went up and fucking ate my balls or whatever. I think I was waiting to go. I bombed too, but Frank went up there. He's like 10 years older than me at the time. It was a super young crowd. I was like 35, so he must have been 45. And he's just bombing, bombing, bombing. And then his last ditch effort to try and get people to listen to him. He goes, hey, you guys like The Sopranos? Huh? You watch The Sopranos? People sort of. And he goes, I play so-and-so. He goes, I'm at the Butter Bing. He goes, Tony Soprano beats the shit out of me every week. This guy in the back goes, he should have killed you. And it was, the timing was perfect. His level, how quiet he could say it, you could still hear it because of this dead ass crowd. I remember Frank got off stage. He's one of the funniest guys I've ever met. Just walked by, never even looked at me, just walked by going like, wow. And I wanted to laugh, but I had to go on after him, dude. And I think I ate it even more than that. But I don't want to make it out to be that. But that's also the club, the first time I saw Sam Kinison, the first time I saw Andrew Dice Clay. I mean, that place made stars. And Dice Clay, The Day the Laughter Died, one of the most underrated double comedy albums ever. Johnny Carson used to go there and drink when the Tonight Show was in New York City. And Tony,
you saw Sam Kinison like there?
Huh?
You saw Sam Kinison there? You were there enough?
No. I'm saying that stuff happened. That stuff all happened. Yeah, yeah. Oh. You know, mid-80s before I even started. But Tony, who ran the place, told this amazing story of Johnny just being a mean drunk one night. So they got his limo out front on First Avenue, and he lived like down First Avenue. So First Avenue runs uptown. He lived downtown. So he was hammered, and he was in a surly mood and didn't want to get in his car. And he was just going down the street. Yeah, I know. It's the shit you could do. As famous as him, and there was no video of it back in the day. Just pushing people out of the way as they were slowly backing his limo down the street with the door open. Going, come on, Johnny, Mr. Carson, why did you get out? And I fuck away, just pushing people out of the way like a crazy homeless guy. So they had like a million stories of all of these people who were not comedians that were up on that stage because it was also kind of like a supper club. Like musicians and personalities and all kinds of stuff. And he'd be like, yeah, sat right there and played that piano. Piano you lean on every single, it was sort of a working museum. So I think they're going to open it up again someplace else. I'm not sure how much of the decor that they're going to keep, but like, I don't know. It's Helix Sleep, Bert Kreischer. Hey, Bert, you know what? I'm pretty one of a kind, right? I'm unique.
You are, Bill.
Oh, thank you. I like to think I'm a chip off a unique block. Well, Helix Sleep makes mattresses made for how unique we all are and how we sleep differently. Helix, oh, that's how you say heal, like they're healing you. Sleep makes personalized mattresses made right here in the good old USA.
God bless America.
That's right. Shipped straight to your door with free, no contact delivery, free returns and 100-night sleep trial. To choose a mattress, Helix made a quiz that takes just 2 minutes to complete and matches your body type and sleep preferences to the perfect mattress for you. If you like a mattress that's really soft or firm, you sleep on your side or your back or your stomach, you sleep really hot. Ugh, that's so gross to me. With Helix, where they put like a plastic covering down on it, there's a specific mattress for each and everybody's unique taste. Go online and take the test to see what type of mattress is best to you for you. I love Helix, but you don't need to take my word for it. Helix was awarded the number one best overall mattress pick of 2020 by GQ, Wired Magazine, and Apartment Therapy. Just go to helixsleep.com/BillBert, B-I-L-L-B-E-R-T. Take their 2-minute sleep quiz. They'll match you to a customized mattress that will give you the best sleep of your life. They have a 10-year warranty, and you get to try it out for 100 nights risk-free. Gross. They'll even pick it up and give you a full refund if you don't love it, but you will. Right now, Helix is offering up to $200 off at mattress orders for our listeners. Get up to $200 off at Helix Sleep, H-E-L-I-X. I-L, what is it? Yeah, H-E-L-I-X, sorry. Sleep.com/Bill Burt, B-I-L-L-B-E-R-T.
All right.
Follow that, Burt.
I'll try, Bill. I'll try.
That was almost stutter-free.
You did a good job, Bill.
I'm pulling for you, man.
I've been thinking about making some personal changes lately, Bill. I wanted to start by improving my self-care routine. See, the problem was I had no idea where to start. Then, Bill, I found Hawthorne. Hawthorne is a premium tailored personal care brand that makes it easy for guys like us to feel and smell their best.
Get out of here with
their quiz, Bill. Very simple. They ask me things like, what's your favorite drink? How do you like to spend the night out? Do you smoke? How do they factor your God damn it, I was doing so good. How do you think they factor your answers into the results, Bill?
I'm blaming the sentence. That was awkwardly worded.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
It's actually really easy. The quiz was super simple. You just go through, bang it out. It was fun. I kind of started getting introspective, and the products I got are amazing. I got a great cologne, day and night. I have one for the mornings to wear around the house, and then one for night when I get in bed.
That's right. You don't want to get her too excited in the morning.
Yeah, exactly. You got to temper yourself.
Right.
If you want to upgrade your self-care routine, Hawthorne is fun and a convenient way to get super high-quality products tailored specifically for your needs. Hawthorne even takes the risk out by giving you free shipping on your order and returns. If you don't like your product, they'll even retailer them based on your feedback. Do what I did. Take the Hawthorne quiz today and get started on your personalized self-care routine by going to Hawthorne.co. Use the promo code BILLBURT to get 10% off your first purchase. That's Hawthorne.co. The promo code is BILLBURT. Hawthorne.co, Hawthorne.co, and use the promo code BILLBURT.
All right, look who's next. My bookie. Hey, how you doing? How you doing? All right, between the NFL, college ball, and Major League Baseball playoffs, there's no shortage of sports to watch or to put your money on. And with the way the last presidential debate went, it won't be long before my bookie has odds on Donald Trump to join the WWE. Whether you tuned in or not, I hope you guys cashed in on some of those debate prop bets that went up. I can't believe, is this real? You can bet on this? Because there were several that could have been considered free money. Trump to mention Russia, that was a lock.
A lock.
And the best part about betting at MyBookie, they offer great value in their odds and lines. Whether you're betting on the NFL action or their crazy prop bets, there's always a little something for everyone and always, always cash to be won. I've been playing in the MyBookie Super Contest this season. We're not going to talk about my record. I've been getting smoked. And I hope you guys are too, but it's only a $10 entry for the chance to win $100,000 in cash prizes. For a $10 investment, I don't think you can beat 10 bucks, right? Sign me up twice. Can I do that? Probably not. Another good investment to make would be to fade the Atlanta Falcons for the rest of the year if they blow another late lead. Well, they certainly did do that last weekend, much to my chagrin. Whatever you do, if you're going to bet this season, bet at MyBookie and use promo code BILLBURT, B-I-L-L-B-E-R-T, to grab yourself a deposit match when you join. Because who doesn't like free money on top of their deposit? That's promo code BILLBURT to claim your bonus at MyBookie.
Nate, I told a joke the other night on stage, and Shane Torres goes, "That's a Nate Bargatze joke." And I went, "What do you mean?" He goes, "If Nate had that joke, he'd kill with it." And I had a rough time with the joke. So tell me how to tell it, okay?
I hope it's so dumb. Like, I hope you're like, all right, I hold keys up, and I something real simple, and you're like, all right, Bert, I don't know what you think my comedy is.
So I'm fucking this child, right?
Yeah. And
okay. All right. No.
I wouldn't say the F word, but I'd still keep the rest the same. Go ahead.
No. So our yard guy cut down a tree in our backyard that was dead, and it now you can see a Jack in the Box sign from if you're standing in our backyard, or more importantly, if you're in our pool. And I said to him, I go, why'd you cut the tree down? And he goes, it was dead. And I was like, yeah, but now I can see the Jack in the Box sign and the tree blocked it. And he's like, you don't like Jack in the Box? And I'm like, I love Jack in the Box. He's like, well, then what's the problem with seeing the sign? And I was like, I don't want to see a Jack in the Box sign in my backyard. And he looks, he goes, I can't see it. I said, well, no, when I'm in my pool, I definitely see the Jack in the Box sign. And he's like, well, I've never been in your pool. I was like, none of this matters, Ray. Like, and I it was a funny conversation we had on the bus. I tried it on stage. And Shane goes, nah, that's a Nate Bargatze joke. You can't do that like that. And I went, what is that? So, like, when you write a joke, how do you go about writing a joke? Do you, like, where do you see your strong suit in writing a joke? Like, when you go, oh, this was right into me.
Yeah, that one's a tough one.
For the record, I wanted to laugh. That guy is funny the way.
I thought you would let him get in your pool. Like, I would have put, it's like the idea of his perspective of, like, what if he does get to your pool? You go, well, then get in the pool when you're seeing. And then he's like, I do get it. He's like, all right.
Oh, man, I should have left that tree.
You know what? That was a mistake. And he's fully clothed.
Yeah. You are both standing in the pool, then your clothes on. And you go, ah, you know what? You can see it. And the shell sign. So
maybe it wouldn't be so bad if you had a margarita. Go get a couple margaritas and we'll see if it bothers us.
And that's how you met Shane Torres. That's how now he was the guy that cut your tree down. And now he's on the road with me. So I don't know. This special we're going to do next week. So I had to take this, I had this big long break. And so I've really been trying to make sure I'm ready for this special, so it's not garbage. And so I've been working on sets and looking at, I got a whole chunk on, I was born in 1979, which I'm a generation gap. And so I kind of talk about that. Like, I was born between Gen Xers and millennials. I kind of grew up in two different worlds.
Well, that's interesting.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy. It's like basically 79, maybe 78, maybe 80. If you're in that gap, you don't really identify with either. You kind of got characters from both sides. So it's like really setting that up to explain it. And that was the most I've ever done writing-wise. I never wrote anything word for word. Big reason, because I heard Burr and Patrice talk about it, where it was, you would sound too, it sounds too scripted. And so you want to stay conversational. So you never memorize it. Because if you don't do that, then you're always going to say something a little different. You're not saying the main part of the joke, but you're saying a little word here, and the ands and the these, and that stuff gets told different, and that makes it, I think, the audience feel like it's more of a conversation.
It's funny, I relate to that as far as being between generations, because
a few of them, Cusper,
I'm supposed to be Generation X, but Generation X to me was grunge, Seattle, the 90s, and I was an 80s guy. I hated all of those bands when they first came, or I was confused by them. Like, what happened to all of my bands? How come nobody's doing tap-on solos anymore with their hair teased up? And I was really offended when Kurt Cobain sort of mocked the tap-on solo in Teen Spirit. I was like, this guy's a douche. And I right as I got into him, he ended up killing himself. So I don't know if I take the blame on that, but like I never
people in this whole thing that you've killed, that bartender and Kurt Cobain.
But like that whole slacker, My Own Private Idaho, fucking Feeling Minnesota shit, when they tried to commercialize it, I didn't relate to any of that. I related to the 80s Party On, Spuds McKenzie, giant parachute pants, people on fucking blow. I mean, that was, by the time, what it is? I turned 22 in 1990, and that, like, 21's the last exciting birthday as far as like, hey, now I can go out and I can drink. I can go to a titty bar. And then you do it and you're like, well, I'm not getting away with anything. Now I'm just spending money. And then 22 happens and you're like, fuck, I'm going to be 30 someday. That's how I felt it. And it was just like, I should have graduated college. I haven't yet. And I'm still slugging my way through this, figuring out what the fuck I want to do. And that's when advertising all sort of latched onto that Gen X thing. And I just felt like, Matthew McConaughey in Dazed and Confused, where I was still hanging around the high school kids. If I said like I was into like Smashing Pumpkins, which I ended up liking all of those bands, but way after I should have. I sort of hung on to, you know, Dr. Feelgood, Motley Crue, 1989. I hung on to that to about maybe Dave Grohl, Foo Fighters, 95. There's a five-year gap, other than Jane's Addiction, that I kind of let go of all of pop culture. So I never related.
I was straight up Gen X, straight up. I read Douglas Coupland's book, Generation X. I fucking wore. I wore all the clothes. I loved it. I loved it. I'm a Gen Xer.
What year were you born?
72.
72. So you were 18. So yeah, right. Your college years.
Yeah.
Man, your freshman year in college, Nevermind comes out. It's over.
Freshman year of college, Nevermind comes out. And I remember hearing that and being like, holy shit. Pearl Jam, fell in love with Pearl Jam. Grew my hair out. Used to do an Eddie Vedder impression where I go, here. I was so.
You know, Joe List has been to like 40 Pearl Jam concerts.
Wow.
He's in the fan club.
Sober too.
All right, my freshman year of what should have been my freshman year if I didn't stay back was Slippery When Wet, Bon Jovi came up. So that's how much of a difference being born 5 years later was.
That's crazy. I remember being torn because my freshman year of college, grunge is out, right? And we hate like Motley Crue, all that. Is like not what we're listening to. It's don't tease your hair, let it be natural. Big combat boots, shorts, and fucking Motley Crue writes one of the possibly best songs I've ever heard. And I used to listen to it in secret. Don't Go Away Mad, Just Go Away.
Oh, that was 89 off of that's the Dr. Feelgood album. I thought you was it John Corabi, the guy who came in when Vince wasn't in the band, and they put out this killer fucking album just called Motley Crue. They wanted to call themselves something else, but the record company's like, no, you got to stay with Motley Crue. They wanted to like rebrand themselves like a different name, you know, almost like a Duff and Slash and Velvet Revolver. I think they wanted to do something like that, and he was just a beast of a singer. It's a fucking killer album. But it got buried because of all of that. It was just like if you weren't from Seattle, almost at that point, you couldn't get your album played.
Hey Nate, what golfers? What professional golfers are you friends with?
Jason Day and I know Tony Finau and Webb Simpson. I mean, Jason, me and Jason are probably the closest. And then,
dude, can I just say something? That is the third time on this podcast I've told
you know why you're
long asking. Story and then you guys neither one of you address it. I've never felt so old in my life. I'm sorry.
I kind of forgot.
I went on for 25 minutes about Dangerfield and you guys are just like, yeah, Nate, so is it the Ohio River that forms the border of Tennessee?
It was just so how do you write, Nate?
yeah.
Sorry.
Bird just wandered off in the corner. He's not even looking at
it. Probably over 50 people, man, holding it down.
I just went out and played with Michael Collins. You know the caddy, Michael Collins, Nate?
Yeah, I know him. I played with him, actually.
What's that?
I played with him. I saw Brooks Koepka commented on something.
Yeah, Florida State Cry.
That's pretty exciting. I got
a bunch of golfers now that are following me, and then I've been texting back and forth with. But we played out at the Bad Little Nine. Have you heard of that?
I played it. Yeah.
You played it?
Yeah.
That's a fucking, so Bill, this is a par three put together by a guy named Bob Parsons who
he owns PXG and started
GoDaddy. Parsons.
He started GoDaddy. He's an old Navy guy or a Marine Corps guy who legit is a brilliant thinker the way his brain works. I think he's doing studies on MDMA and post-traumatic stress syndrome, and so this par three.
In spare time, he designs golf courses. This guy's like a renaissance man.
He sells golf PXG golf clubs. Have you heard also, of PXG? It's a.
I have a full set. Yeah.
Yeah, I do.
I did a fitting. Did you do a fitting?
That's gonna make you guys good.
Three sets of them.
So wait, no.
I love teasing golfers. Is this the set of clubs where you're actually going to be good?
Well, let me tell you, Bill. I'm hitting my 7-iron about 185.
They had to get scientists to redesign it every fucking year. Dude, golf, there is no other sport, and I'm not talking about you two guys, there is no other sport in the world where so many non-fucking athletes play it because their doctor told them they were going to have a fucking heart attack unless they started walking. So then they just take this sport up, and they suck so bad, and they tie up the good players that every fucking – how much bigger can the head of a driver be before these fucking nerds – can keep it in the middle of a football field.
Yeah.
I've never seen, like, I'm not disrespecting golf in that the people that shoot par can break 80. Those are athletes and the mental that you have to have it. But there is a whole pile of shit out there on the links that is dragging it down and creating this fucking of like, golf is just the hardest. It's not that fucking hard.
I see. I disagree. It's very.
Isn't.
To keep a ball in that fairway is pretty. You can just by inches go the other way.
No,
you suck. Not for 18 holes. You can't do it for 18 holes.
I know, but I don't play. I play once every 3 fucking years. I do half a swing and I can basically keep it there.
But if you're not keeping the score, I could hit up one baseball. If you throw a baseball, I could hit one.
Well, first of all, I'm not keeping score. Breakfast ball and all that bullshit you guys have. I count every fucking one of them. Just to shame the other people in my fucking foursome is that that's a mulligan. That's a breakfast ball. That's a gimme. What the fuck kind of sport is it?
That's a gimme.
Pulling out this fucking driver the size of half a jet ski. Have you do Callaway? Have you tried this fucking thing yet? The fucking ball is this big. It's like a fucking 2-year-old when you get that big red bat to hit a fucking beach ball with it.
Oh,
yeah, keep swinging.
And you driving a car.
He would have hated my fitting.
Bucks, after their doctor tells them they need to go walk around, they go out and they get a fucking golf cart. Smoking a stogie with their fucking varicose vein leg hanging out the side of it. Driving around, dude. It's a jerk-off. Generally speaking, it is a jerk-off sport.
Because you haven't played it. You go to the ground.
The way you fucking dress with your dumb preppy clothes.
Hey, Bill, you dress like a fucking golfer for the record.
You're in a fucking Three Stooges sketch.
No, you wear a Nike golf hat all the time.
Jerk off sport.
You go to Top Golf and you
the average guy that's out there is a fucking jerk off.
Top Golf is fucking amazing. And
Top
Bill,
Golf is amazing. Amazing athletes. If you can break 80 and you're shooting par, you are a fucking amazing athlete.
Top Golf's
the rest of them, the rest of that Waffle House Grand Slam breakfast fat fucks out there with their stupid Izod shirts and their sweaty man tits trying to find a club big enough to keep the fucking ball in the court can all go fuck themselves.
Oh, this is going to make you so frustrated,
Bill.
There's
nobody out there that you would pick to go play flag football with, the average fat fuck.
Bill, this is going to make you 10 times angrier. So then both Nate and I have been fitted for clubs. What that means is they go in, they watch your swing, they see you hit the ball to the right, and then they just basically pick the club that'll make you hit it straight. Like they bend it a little bit, they give you a stiffer shaft, a bigger head, until you're hitting it dead straight. And you're like, all right, that's your set of clubs. We're not going to fix your swing. We're just going to fix your club.
Wait, how many times have they redesigned the football in your lifetime so you could throw a tight spiral? A football is a football. You can either throw it or you can't.
I'm banging these clubs.
How do you shoot, Bert? Do you keep score?
No,
what
I go
kind
out
of
there.
Tee do you use? Have you tried the graphite tee? It kind of tees it up a little bit more. I got these new tees. They got a little fan behind it that already starts the ball moving before you even hit it. So you get an extra 5 yards on your fucking swing.
Ooh, I like that.
Where'd you get those tees at? Can you send them up?
Yeah, exactly. I was hitting a 7-iron 185 with those PGXs, and I was like,
"What do you?" It's PXGs.
PXGs.
What did you? What do you shoot? Do you even keep score when you play? Like, are you? Okay.
I mean, I would talk about.
I can break. I break 80, but Bert.
No, hold on! Don't you fucking put this on me, Bart?
No, he's talking about you, dude.
No, he's not talking about me.
He's talking about you.
No, he's not.
Golf, I don't think it's that hard. Rich Voss is good at it.
Yeah.
Rich Voss is actually pretty good at golf. He is actually really good at golf. Good at golf.
You ever seen Rich play basketball? I have.
Dude, I played with
Ben Bailey, I think, basketball with Ben Bailey. He's like a triathlete.
I played golf with Ben Bailey too.
Ben's a really good hockey player too.
Hey, I grew up playing. If I play the first time out, we played with Michael Collins on that bad little nine. Yeah. I hit a fucking sand wedge 130 and flew the green. Michael Collins dotted the fucking pin. And I had called a hole in one. He hits the pin. Gone.
Hey, you guys heard of the new space shuttle grips they're putting on the golf clubs? It's literally the same stuff that's underneath the space shuttle, so it doesn't burn up during re-entry. You got that on your putter.
It keeps it. It's the bust of the ball.
I love the line on the putter too, so you make sure you hit it straight. I mean, what
does it matter? Because if you're barely off, it completely matters. Because if you're just a tiny bit off on a 10-foot putt, that becomes a much bigger problem. Here's my question.
No. I think Bill's right.
How dumb sports are. I have never seen so much time and effort put in to that, as Carlin says, that fucking waste of real estate that is a golf course. It's like you're standing up there. Nobody's guarding you. Everybody has to shut up when you try and he's going to hit the ball. No. Dude, you're fucking going to hit an NBA foul shot. There's some guy with his dick out swinging it around. You got to block that out. Fuck out of here.
Nate, he's right. You should put down golf and pick up drums. Don't start a band. Just pick up drums so you can play by yourself in a garage, not with a guitarist, just by yourself in a garage.
And you know what? You're 100% right. That's absolutely ridiculous. So now maybe you could admit to how many – I am the first to admit I am a dad drummer. I stink. And what I do is a tremendous waste of time, but it makes me happy, okay? I know golf does that to you too, but stop – talking, you fucking jerk offs with your fucking clubs and your grips and your fucking, you know, have you seen the new flags that they got? It makes so much less noise when you're trying to tee off.
Bryson DeChambeau gained some weight for the Masters, Nate. Did you hear?
Dude, it's super exciting. Bryson's driving the ball 400 yards. No one's ever seen that.
Yeah.
Where he's playing. If you could ever go play with a pro golfer.
John Daly could do that after a 12-pack.
Yeah, I'm not saying he can't. I've actually seen John Daly.
He used to play the game shit-faced and would win tournaments.
John Daly would park his bus at the old club I used to be a member at. He would just park and just be there for 2 weeks and then just live in that parking lot. And he still does now. But I'm not saying John Daly
is one of the most amazing human beings.
Yes.
You know the story with him and Tiger Woods?
I wish people would just let him live his fucking life.
My favorite thing, two favorite things of John Daly. One was when he got kicked or when he left the tournament, he kept hitting balls in the water and he kept just trying it. And he did 10 cups. And just kept dropping them, hitting them, and then just leaves. And he leaves with his girlfriend and her kid, which is my favorite because that's like he just would be with someone that has it like this chick on his kid. And then they have to walk out together. And they just leave and go to their car. His kid's actually really good at golf right now. But then Tiger Woods at a PGA championship, the PGA major. And John Daly's, after the first round, he's drinking beers at the bar, and he tells Tiger. Tiger walks by, and he goes, come have a beer with me. And Tiger's like, nah, I'm going to go putt. He's like, why are you always practicing? And then Tiger Woods goes, well, if I was as talented as you are, I wouldn't have to, and then left. Because he would say that's how talented John Daly was.
John Daly was amazing.
He was so good that Tiger was like, if I was like you, I wouldn't have to, but I have to. So he had to go practice.
I'm a huge Tiger and John Daly fan. I like the pros.
Yeah.
You'd like Bryson DeChambeau, like Bill. Bill, you'd really like Bryson, don't you think?
Like Brooks Koepka.
Brooks Koepka.
I like Bubba Watson. I love that one. Yep, Bubba. Although, the first time I ever watched the Masters wire to wire was the year Kenny Perry. I just that was one of the worst things I ever watched. His family was there on the 18th. I just heard, like, he didn't even say goodbye to him. He just got in his car and started driving afterwards. Like, the level of collapse.
That's why golf's so good. Is like, you see that. I think golf is a great
level, Nate. At that level.
Yeah. But
I watched the majors. I am a fan of professional golf. What I'm not a fan of is non-athletes sitting around talking about this fucking game that they're playing so they don't have a heart attack.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of bad golfers like that do that. That's why public courses are tough to go to. They have fights. There's a course here in Nashville that I grew up playing, Riverside, where the greens are right next to the next tee box. So there's just fights all day long because these guys are not good enough to hit the greens, and that tee box is right there. So just everybody is getting hit by a ball. And, I mean, it is just straight up people just hitting a ball and then just running and having to fight a guy before they play. And then they got to follow that guy the rest of the round. Yeah. You're just behind the guy that you fought for 4 hours. You got to just fall behind.
When I was a kid, I used to play winter golf with a buddy of mine. We'd go to private courses, and we would just play. We would jump the fence. It'd be like frost on the fairways and shit. And we played it, first one in the hole would win. And then in the end, you get to the industrial park and try to break a window.
Yeah. So y'all played the real rule. Y'all played the real rules of golf. First one in the hole wins.
It was fun. Wait, I love that you two reinvented the wheel. So the first one in the hole wins.
No, let's not keep score. First one in the hole
wins. We only had like two clubs, and it was the only times I've gone golfing. Like by the third hole, I am so fucking bored. And then by then, somebody's always in a bad mood because they're not playing well and they're over there muttering to themselves. And then you can't talk to them. Well, you played the rules. Don't talk to me. I'm in a bad fucking mood. And I mean, I don't know.
You got to go play it. If you play it, I mean, that's why to be a member at a course somewhere, which is not crazy. If someone's obsessed with golf, you can be members at courses for $300 a month or something. Whatever your thing would be, they're not all this crazy, stuffy kind of. Some are, but then a lot aren't.
Is it $300 and then you have to pay for a round, or is it just?
No, I mean, it differs. Some are $600. Some are, you can find some that are $300. My dad is joined somewhere that, I mean, it was nothing because they were trying to get members, and it's not the best course. But I want to say he paid – it's like under $100. But you wouldn't pay for a round then. You might pay for a cart.
There's like bobcats and shit on the course.
Oh, it's – I mean, yeah. There's, you got to move your ball around a lot because you're like – you're just in a dirt pile and you're like – and you're in the fairway and you're like, all right, let's move it.
The ones I always thought were the scariest courses were the ones in Florida where there's like alligators in the water. Oh,
that's where I grew up playing.
Yeah, fuck that.
Alligators,
too,
rattlesnakes, water moccasins. You when you lost your ball in the woods, sometimes you'd be like, nah, I think I'm just going to let it go.
Now, let me ask you this. Has anybody died in course in Florida? In Florida, going to try and retrieve a ball, their leg to an alligator. There was a guy down in San Diego. The San Diego area, an older guy, they were on this hole and there was like some sort of cliff or something that led down to the fucking street, and the golf cart was in reverse. And I think he was in the passenger seat and he was leaning over doing one of those, went right off the back and killed himself. It's a brutal sport, man. It's a tough sport. You guys.
My dad had the.
I just realized we all have beards.
Joe Theismann, my dad broke his leg like Joe Theismann golfing. He was standing in the back of his bag at a cart, and an older guy was in with him. And this old man went to try to drive the cart with just his feet. And so he just pressed the gas though and just snapped into my dad's leg. And it was like the Joe Theismann break.
If you search that on Google, if you type in death by alligator on the golf course, immediately follows it up. There've been several. Headline from 2018 was it dragged her in the water. Golfer called 911 to report.
Oh my God.
Dude, what's worse, Bill?
Two of the scariest fucking things ever, eaten by an alligator, Komodo dragon.
Oh, fucking Komodo dragon.
Komodo dragons, like, I don't even know, I understand how those things are legal.
They bite you and then they track you because they know you're going to die. They just follow
you. Or if you're so small, there's enough of them, they all just hold on to you until they just fucking start ripping you apart while you're alive.
Big. When we were...
necks on them.
When we were kids in Tampa, we'd go down to like a lake by a green and just get in the water and feel with our feet and get balls. And you were just no fear of alligators, just fucking dumb kids. Like, get a bunch of balls and then sell them to golfers.
What'd you sell them for? A quarter? Or?
I have no I barely remember. I remember getting a nasty sinus infection from being in those lakes. Nasty sinus infection. Yeah. So wait, Nate, I want to go back to the special you're taping. Where are you taping it?
It's Universal. They're doing a lot of stuff up there. So where the Universal Studios is, and I guess in the, I think they're doing America's Got Talent, American Idol, wherever they're taping that kind of stuff. And so there's like 100 people and I think I can talk. Yeah. And all that.
So you have an audience and everything?
Yeah, 100 people, they got to get tested, and I think they're all wearing masks, so we'll see if that's all right. But, I mean, luckily I've been doing these drive-ins, so, I've actually kind of really not minded the drive-ins.
I love them. I think they're fucking great.
If you just do your show and you do your act and don't – like, I think anybody that's having trouble with them goes with a negative attitude, and then they – instead of just going, do your stupid act – and tell your dumb jokes and then put on a show and go back to your bus. Like, that's what it is. But you can hear the people up front. So at least I'm kind of used to the weird timing.
No, you're, I'm telling you right now, because I've done some amphitheaters now. I did say, are you doing San Antonio?
I'm not. No.
San Antonio is, they sell picnic tables. Mm. So there's like 1,000 people in the courtyard and they sell picnic tables. But it's really close to you. I mean, meaning, as opposed to a drive-in. And man, I will tell you, Nate, when you go into this Universal, you'll feel like you've been swimming with fucking overalls on. When you get up and close to an audience, having worked at these drive-ins, you are going to be murdering. I mean, you're going to be like, what the fuck? Is that how funny I am? Because you're right.
I'm getting a new driver, Nate.
A brand new driver?
A brand new driver.
I'm about to get a new driver.
Hey, what is the protocol? If a friend of yours gets snagged by an alligator, you got a club in your hand. I mean, call the 911. It's fucking over.
No, I'm going in after him.
Is there a way? Because I know alligators, if they're straight at you, they got to turn to the side to get you.
Yeah, I think that's so.
They want to bite you.
I think that turn to the side is super fast.
Huh?
I think that when they turn to the side and get you, I think if they're right here in front of you, I don't think you can sit there going, well, they can't. You got to wait till they get to the side. I think their side moves happen all at once.
They come in like that. I was watching one of those fucking guys who probably end up getting killed by one. But, like, if you took, like, a club, a driver, I don't know which guys you guys would use, you know, with your new grip on it. And you just started.
I wouldn't use a driver.
I think the fucking thing. Yeah. Dude, there is no fucking way. If that thing grabbed you, I'm calling 911. And if I got a club in my hand, I mean, I might, no pun intended, alligator arm a couple of swings.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to be like, yes, it just dragged him under. I mean, it's fucking old. But I would also think, like, when a wild animal grabs a human being, like, it always blows my mind that we somehow survived long enough to have houses and clothes and shit. Like, just everything is so much faster, so much stronger. Like if an alligator of a certain size just grabs your leg and goes like that, you're just going into the fucking water. Mm-hmm. It's taking you down and you're done, right?
I would try
I'm going in like, after my buddy.
I would try to act like I'm with the alligator on his side. So then I'm like,
I'm staying on the shore, grabbing the longest club I can. I'm not going in the fucking water.
I am.
No, are you, Bert?
Yeah, because the working part of the alligator is already taken.
Oh, yeah, let me tell you, I roll up the old.
Let me tell you something. You're not getting. See, here's where you're misconceived. You think you're going to see like a
your fucking Kobe beef fucking stomach, and they would drop whatever he was eating. He'd be all over. You've eaten enough barbecue in your life. I bet you're delicious.
I would be a good treat for an alligator. If an alligator's got you, it's not going to be a 13-foot. It'll be a 6-foot, and I can take it.
I had an alligator when I was 20.
What?
I had a Cayman alligator, me and my buddy, John Paul. We lived together, and you could buy a Cayman alligator at this, like, critter store, and so we bought one.
Just out of curiosity, what else were they selling at Critters?
Just other alligators.
Rattlesnakes and shit?
It was all reptiles. It's a reptile place. I just went to a reptile place in Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania. Last show I did before COVID, and I go into I had a whole big story about going to this Cape Fear Serpentarium, and so I like going to these weird reptile places, and I see a handwritten sign that says reptiles, and it's just in an office building, and I'm like, well, we got to go see what this guy's up to. And he had a two-headed turtle. You could buy an alligator there. A bunch of snakes. And he had a gun in his waistband of his pants. And so it was like that kind of place. It was a place that you go, I bet the guy he's renting this from doesn't know what he's actually doing in here.
That sounds like a Netflix series.
Oh, it's the start of one. I mean, I remember he had the gun was in, not a holster. Like a holster, you're like, all right, this guy bought a holster. It's in his pants like they do in the movies.
Can I back down on golf for half a second? Every time I've gone, I've had a great time hanging out with people, but they just take it so fucking seriously. And they just, like, somebody's always in, like, a pissed off mood, like they just blew the U.S. Open. It's
you're
like
going with the wrong guys. That's the problem. You're going with the wrong people.
I'm smelling a Bill Burt segment. Nate's out here. Me, Bill, and Nate go golfing. What do you say?
Golfing's the best sport for pandemics. COVID's been.
I think tennis is better.
Then you got to hit a ball that you're connecting back and forth to each other.
Yeah, but it doesn't. You don't touch it. I mean, you don't golf ball.
A golf ball. You're never. Your world is your clubs and your ball, and then you're never. You're never sharing.
Yeah, golf is a great pandemic.
You guys are all hanging up at the fucking tee off place, waiting for
something. Well, you don't do that. You don't have to do that, so you don't do that. But you're smacking COVID back and forth, just hoping, all back and forth, just COVID, hoping everybody.
It's not on the ball, Nate.
There's a good chance. We don't know that. There's a breeze in the ocean. There's a breeze in the ocean that keeps it off the tennis ball.
I think we do know that you can't get it that way.
Hey, Nate.
You guys hug at the net at the end and say good match, then I think you could get it.
Nate, two shows tonight in a drive-in, 40-degree temperature. Look at my stage set up.
Dude, how did you get those spaces? I just did Kansas City. Where are you at? Oh, St. Louis. I just did Kansas City, and it was 39 degrees, and I learned that I hold my hand – I hold the mic with my left hand a lot because my – pinky was numb.
Yeah.
You know what? I don't move I'm just left-handed. I never thought of it. My pinky started hurting because it was so cold that I would go, oh.
Do you know, I know some comic was trying to tell me that stand-up's going to be over at the end of this. It's just like, dude, people are coming out in 39-degree weather to sit on grass outside to go see it. It's going to be bigger than ever.
It's not going to be over. But I do think I'm borderline wanting a separation of stand-up comedians. I think we got a lot of people that are get to call themselves comedians now. And I think there's a lot of tricks being used out there. Like, see, you have to be able to do an hour act an hour show to be called a stand-up comedian, and then the rest of them can be you're an entertainer. If you go this other route.
I smell a purist. I love a purist.
I'm getting furious, dude. You remember telling you about like, I mean, I've been alone too long. I'm like, let me tell you something.
You know what I always loved? I loved when a like an ex-porn star would try stand-up and some comics would get mad. It's like, well, aren't you watching free porn? You kind of drove him or her into this, didn't you?
I'm fine with that. I don't care about the – that's like golf. So there's a lot of amateur golfers. There's a lot of – I get the idea of people – if you can sell tickets, like, I'm not against
– a lot of fat people trying not to have a heart attack or another.
There's a lot of that. And they get to be – they get to talk to us as if – what the hardest thing to do is create a one-hour act. You know what's – it's so hard to create jokes that work all over the world. That's the toughest thing to do. So quit doing tricks – that you get to go like, well, this thing is my trick that I get to use in my act instead of, and I get to package it like I'm a stand-up.
Oh, would I love to watch stand-up specials with you, Nate? You know, back in the day, me and DeRosa, when Netflix first came out, and if you just sent them a special, it was like they would put it on.
Yeah.
They had some really bad ones. And we used to have one night a week, we would watch them and just sit there dying laughing at like how bad they were. I think everybody does that in just to be random, like welders. If welders see somebody who sucks at welding, I mean, they'll be on the ground dying laughing like they're watching Richard Pryor. So I don't feel too bad doing stuff like that. But that's essentially how I ended up in this business, is I would watch stand-up comedy with a buddy of mine, and he'd be like, these guys aren't funny. We're funnier than they are. We got to try this shit. So. I don't know.
I think I do think it's going to be better though. Like it's getting, I think stand-up is becoming a little more mainstream of an art form, or, you know, not that we call ourselves art form, but like as an entertainment thing to go do, stand-up is way more out there than it ever has been. People can go look for it and do it and go to shows. People are coming to these drive-ins. I mean, I think it's getting, I think it's the real deal. You know, I think stand-up's the real deal. And I think we're gonna get a lot more people coming in to say they're comedians that are just videos on Instagram, you know.
Yeah, like I'm definitely of the school that stand-up comedy evolves, but to say that it's over, it's like people don't want to laugh anymore.
Yeah, is that Giannis that says that? That's Giannis, who's the maniac that is.
Giannis, I love Giannis. He thinks everything's over. New York City's over.
Yeah.
This country's over. Stand-up is over.
That's Giannis. It's been over a long time.
Yeah.
What was your favorite drive-in, Nate?
You know, Cape Cod, I thought was like just – it's just where it's at. Yeah. I've never been to Cape Cod. And so where it was located and how they built it up – I'm talking about just the location of it – I thought was very, very cool.
Yeah.
You watched movies? We watched Halloween in Louisville or the LaRange. They played Halloween for us, and we watched it alone, sitting in chairs when no one was there. Just watched it on the big on the drive-in.
Driving
by herself.
Yeah, I do two shows, Nate. So like, it's really late when I get done.
I get it. You know, you're out there playing games.
You think there's other occupations where they bust balls like that? Like, do you think doctors are like, yeah, I'm not a podiatrist, I'm a heart surgeon, so I'll be parking over here.
I bet they do. How many surgeries you got to do? Yeah. How many surgeries you got? Four? Oh, all right. Now I got a baby heart surgery. So, you know, some big boy stuff. But, yeah. I bet they do.
Did you play Butler, Pennsylvania?
That was the first one I did.
That's my favorite one. That's my favorite one.
That was the first one. I did enjoy it. And then, but that was the first one.
Yeah, so.
It took me a second to get used to it.
And then Chicago. One and a half shows, and then you just get used to. You just get used to, oh, this is what it sounds like. Like I did a parking lot out here, and they were in their cars, and I was also trying to remember my act. And then by the second show, it just becomes like, oh, all right, now this level of laughing is killing. So now I feel comfortable and I can tell my shit jokes here. Hey, by the way, speaking of the great Giannis Pappas, Nate Land is kind of coined that phrase Isn't that how you the name of your podcast? Because
yeah,
because
he says every once you leave New York, everybody's just a bunch of me's walk around with this hat and like, you know, Walmart parking lots, no mask. You know, it's actually pretty insulting what he said.
No, it's classic the astounding ignorance.
Oh yeah,
of so many New Yorkers, dude. You know when I worked with Verzi when we were in we were driving from San Antonio, Texas, to Austin, Texas. He legitimately asked me, "Do you think we need a gun?" Because there's people sneaking over the Mexican border. It's just like, how dumb are you guys? This is my theory. Too many songs were written about New York City that blow New York City. If I can make it there, and then, you know, in New York, all that shit, they get so mesmerized by it that when they go out into the world, like they go and they look at a skyline and they just go, this place sucks. We have more buildings than you. And it's just like,
I would say if you can make it in New York, you got to move to LA now. So it doesn't matter.
Then, I know. And people always talk about how difficult New York is. It's infinitely more easy, I feel, than Los Angeles. Los Angeles is brutal.
Yeah.
You come out here, it's like the entire, you fly across the country, you watch it slowly dying, right? It goes from this really rich, green, beautiful thing to just this fucking patch of dirt out here. And yeah, if you don't make it, then I mean, you're looking, you got 3,000 mile ride back. If I didn't make it in New York, I could be in my car 3 hours. I'd be back at my parents' house. It wasn't that big a deal.
Well, that's Giannis would do, because he would always tell me I don't have culture. And I'm like, you live three blocks from your mother, from your mom's house. She lives three blocks from here. I go, I'm from Tennessee. I go, what are you talking about? Just because the guy from Nigeria that's next door to you doesn't mean you get what he's been through, you know?
No, and they're meatheads. I'm not saying I'm not a meathead, but Giannis and he is a meathead. I love him.
He is a meathead.
This doesn't feel right because he's not here, because I would definitely say that.
It feels only right. Don't worry. He trashes us on his podcast when none of us are there. So
I actually think that New Yorkers get scared when they leave New York or something. Something happens because they always have to take a picture of the skyline and say that it's lame. Where it's kind of like, you know, I go to New York and I think it's fucking amazing. It's like the Paris of America. I think it's great. But I can still go to Philly and do Philly shit and have a good time. Pittsburgh's one of my favorite places. I mean, I like Milwaukee. I like Chattanooga. I just do what people do when you go there. I don't try to fucking get, you know, a great slice of pizza when I'm in Chattanooga, Tennessee. Not saying they don't
have it. You
can't
get a good slice in Chattanooga.
Yeah, you can't get it. The fucking place is fucking closed. It's like you guys go out at 11 at night.
Yeah, nobody does.
You're drinking for 4 hours. Yeah. You could be done by 11 if you left at 7.
Wait, are you drinking these days, Nate?
No, I haven't drank for a year and a half, 2 years.
No.
Yeah.
For good?
I don't know. I mean, maybe. I mean, it's, you know, dude, it just hurts too much. It's no fun. We're on the road constantly. Me and Burr had two different experiences. We went to Daytona. It was a real big problem. And then Talladega, we were very normal and just sat and watched the race.
Was Daytona? I don't even remember what happened in Daytona.
It wasn't a problem. I'm just saying we got after it. Because I was like, we had to start drinking early because I was like, dude, this is what they do. So we have to drink at 8 a.m. So we woke up and just had booze at 8. And
then we kept it. Awesome. I remember that. Our hotel rooms were on the same floor.
Yeah.
I think I had like
in the same room because I found a 2-bedroom apartment. It was impossible to get a place.
Oh, that's right.
Because it sells out like a year before you could do it.
So wait, did you guys do a show there or just go there?
We did a show. So it's one of your specials just aired the week before, and it was your first show back. And I was actually going to take my stand-ups, the half hour on Netflix, that next week. I was flying back to L.A. And then we went to Daytona. We met up. We did the show. And then the next day we went to Daytona. And the Gronkowski was there. Keanu Reeves said he was a big fan and was doing an impression of you to you.
Wait, Keanu Reeves was doing an impression of Bill Burr to Bill Burr?
Yeah. Do you remember that? When he's all set in the – up in the – they set us in the – you know, they introduced all the celebrities. And so I thought – because I thought, well, Burr's up there. And then I actually got up there. I was in the corner, and I just got to be like –
oh, yeah.
You were sitting next to Keanu Reeves, and he was like a big fan of you.
No fucking way. Yeah. Bill, how do you not tell me this?
Dude, I was pretty hammered. There was another one.
Gronkowski, the whole Gronkowski family was there.
Wait, hold on. Push pause. What did Bill, you've had to have interacted with the Gronks, Bill.
No, I just leave them alone. That's my thank you to them is I leave them alone. I'm not going to go in there and be like, hey, I grew up on fucking 2 times home from the state. And then he's stuck in that conversation again.
I would say Rex
if
Ryan.
If he looked over and just said, oh, you're that comedy guy, listen to comedy, hey, I would talk to him. But if he doesn't say shit to me, dude, Gronkowski, nothing but getting bothered.
They're kind of in their own
world. All they do is just get bothered, dude. Dude, I know you, Bert. You're coming in the side. Hey, Gronk, I just want to say.
That is totally me.
I never watched that whole clip. When you talk to Sandler, I love you too much, Bert. I can't watch it. When you fucking do this shit, when it's over, it's perfect, and then you just go, hey, Adam, I just want to say before you go. When you did that, I was just like going like, oh, no. Rewind. Go back to pre-decision.
Oh, that's, I can't help it, man. It's who I am. I got to be who I am.
You do, and that's working for you. And I got to be who I am, which means I get fucking – I used to get hammered. Oh, man. The glory days, they'll pass you by. Man, I had fun at both of those. I had fun at Talladega watching everybody else getting ripped. And, dude, that was deep south. Yeah. There was some people out there wearing some shit that, like, you know – I don't think a hipster could put together if they were doing like some sort of sketch, but they were totally. But the thing about the hipster sketch is it takes out the fact that the guy you're looking at who's, you know, dressed crazy also can take an entire car apart, put it back together, and it's better than it was. Which is my big complaint with liberals in their elitist attitudes towards, you know, flyover states. It's like there's doctors, there's mechanics, there's scientists, all of these fucking people live there too. You know what I mean? And what, you tell jokes and you left the state to go fucking host a game show and all of a sudden you're better? I don't know.
What if we announce a one day as a national fall off the wagon day where everyone in America can just drink for one day and it doesn't count against your streak or whatever makes you feel good about not drinking, because I'm bummed that I'm never gonna have a wake up early morning drinking day with Bill and with Nate. Like I'm glad you guys are happy, I'm glad you guys are healthy, but fuck, I'm bummed. That sounds so awesome.
Drink though together, you know, because I was too, like, when I was on the borderline worried about, like, or saying I should stop drinking, me and you did get skanked at Skank Fest. We had a week together.
Yeah.
Like, that was a week where both our wives were, we didn't call them, and we just get a call the next day and go, well, you're not calling me.
Yeah.
This week, and I'm like, Adam. It's like, me and Bert are together. I don't know what to tell you. Droza was there, and then it was like a real, like, we were out every night.
That was fun as fucking shit.
That was the greatest weekend ever. And I mean, my wife was, the whole week was like, I mean, you're not calling. You're just not calling when you go to bed. I go, I don't even know I'm really going to bed.
I do the thing with my wife where I talk to her when I'm hammered, and then the next morning I go, so where are the girls? And she goes, do you not remember what happened last night? And I was like, what? She goes, I told you all about this last night. And I go, no, I'm asking now, where are they? And she goes, they're still camping. And I'm like, oh, yeah, right.
I thought they got back. Okay.
I know. Bert, I've been in your position. There's people that I would love to have drank, but you had 35 years to drink with me. Did we really drink though? I don't. We only did it a couple of times.
We only drank. Me and you. I'll tell you what. I'm going to give you a very meaningful, because Nate, that was one of my favorite drinking times with you. A very meaningful Bill Burr drinking moment. We're about to do the Roxy for a goddamn comedy jam. We go up and we're in the green room, and the green room was just it was like people that were on hit shows, and they didn't know, they weren't like, it was some people that just didn't know comedy. And I remember one girl said to Bill, you do stand up? And Bill just kind of looked at me. He goes, let's go next door. Let's go get a drink. Went to the Rainbow Room, right? We went over, we had a whiskey, and Bill and I both have a whiskey. And he goes, we made it, man. Like, we're at the Rainbow Room having a whiskey before doing a show at the fucking Roxy. God, and we toasted, and I went, fuck, man. I appreciate the fact that you could find the small thing and enjoy it with your cocktail. You could take that cocktail and let it represent something more than just, let's just go get a drink. And I was like, fuck, I didn't slow down to smell the roses. I'm at the goddamn Rainbow Room. We're performing at the fucking Roxy. Like, this is like, if you had told me this in eighth grade, I'd be like, no fucking way. And I'm here. And I was like, I remember wanting to go, Bill, actually, you've made it. I'm with you.
Dude, I've been saying that for 15 years.
Really?
Once I quit my day job and I told jokes for a living, the fact that I got up when I wanted to.
It's crazy.
It's just, that's as free as they'll let you be. When do you get up? When I'm not tired. I mean, now I got kids, so that changed. But when I was a single man and I was just telling jokes and I had no other gig other than my 10-minute set at night and middling on the weekend, when I didn't have a fucking day job and I was in New York City, my little walk-through bedroom, I felt like a fucking king. Anytime I wanted, I could stay out as late as I wanted. I had nobody to fucking answer to, and I was making enough money to keep that going. I mean, like, I don't know. I for the longest time, I'm a simple dude. You get me a bottle of bourbon and me TV, that's it. You're not going to see me for a week.
What is me TV?
Oh, me TV shows all the shows I grew up watching and all the ones I missed.
Oh.
Like Banachek. I never even saw that. It took place in Boston. 77 Sunset Strip. I knew Ephraim Zimbalist Jr. from the FBI show. I didn't know him from that. Peter Gunn. That's that song. Ba-na-na-na-na-na-na. That was the theme song to that. I just got into all of these old cop gumshoe shows, old movies. It makes you feel good too, as far as just like watching today's news where they just focus on hysteria. To a fault. Like, if you do a show in front of 1,500 people and 1,499 have a great fucking time and one person says they were triggered, the story is that you had a controversial show, which is just, it's not true. But it's 2:30 here. I got some shit I got to do here, man. So let's wrap this up.
Nate, we could have you on anytime. You're an easy fucking podcast, man.
Yeah, I would love it, dude. I love to hang with y'all. I always enjoy it.
And he's right in between both of us, right? He's a Southern guy, leans towards you. He doesn't drink anymore, leans towards me. He's got a beard. He made fun of Giannis Pappas. I mean, what else do we need here? This is the perfect guest.
What else do you want?
We got to have Giannis on now, Bill. Have him defend himself.
Oh, Giannis? I'd love to have Giannis. I'd love to have Giannis on. I think he just had a, he had a baby girl, right?
Yep.
So what upcoming shows you got, Nate?
This weekend is Dallas, Austin, two shows in Austin and Dallas too. So that's something.
Nice, nice. Outdoors.
Outdoors in Houston, we're doing half a show. So it's one show in Houston, and then I think December 5 and 6 or 4 and 5, I'm doing San Diego and Anaheim. That weekend, December 5, 6, I believe, San Diego and Anaheim. So
nice. Well,
hit us up when you come out here.
I will. I want to go golf.
We'll hit a par 3. We'll take some video.
Let's go.
That's why your golf experience is bad. You're going to par 3. We're going to go to a real nice place.
Okay.
Nice. All right.
All right, beautiful. Awesome, and I'm not going to practice, and I'll show you. I'll still keep it on the fairway.
So one last question. One last question, Nate. Have you seen The Cabin on Netflix, and what do you think?
Yeah, I'm a huge fan. I was excited for you to see it. I haven't got to watch it yet, but I know everybody's in it. I didn't get asked to be in it, so I appreciate that. So I'll watch it as much as you asked me to be in it. So there you go.
All right.
Burns to the ground, Bert. I hope that show season two, ruins Nate, your season career.
Season two, you and Bill in an episode. What do you think?
I'm down. I'm probably busy, but I'm down. Let me check.
We'll all go golfing. All right. The great Nate Pargatze, everybody. Thank you so much, Nate.
Thanks, Nate.
You guys.
See you next time. All right.